Copyright 2011, JKP, Radha Madhav Dham. All rights reserved.
Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj.
In this series, he incorporates all the main topics of the Hindu scriptures in a beautiful logical flow. The most prominent spiritual confusions of our time are addressed and resolved one by one as the series makes its way towards the culminating topic of bhakti and the path of God realization.
Aho vaki स्तनकालकूटम् जिघांसयापा ययदप्यसाध्वी लेभे गतिम् धात्र्युचिताम् ततोऽन्यम् कं वा दयालुं शरणं व्रजे यस्यैकनि श्वसितकाल मथावलम्ब्य जीवन्ति लोमविलजा जगदण्डनाथाः विष्णुर्महान् स इह यस्य कलाविशेषो गोविन्दमादिपुरुषम् तमहं भजामि यो ब्रह्माणं विदधाति पूर्वं यो वै वेदांश्च प्रहिणोति तस्मै तद्वंह देवमात्मबुद्धिप्रकाशम् मुमुक्षुर्वै शरणमहं प्रपद्ये
The divine souls will have a few minutes of Nam Sankirtan and after that we'll continue with this series on the essence of Sanatan Dharma.
Govinda, 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 Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Govinda, Govinda, Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Radhe, Radhe, Govinda, Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Radhe Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, 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 Radhe Radhe Govinda. Govinda, Govinda, Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Radhe, Govinda, Radhe, Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, 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 Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Govinda, 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 Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Radhe Radhe Govinda, Radhe Radhe Govinda, Radhe Radhe Govinda, Radhe Radhe Govinda. Govinda, 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 Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Govinda, 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 Radhe, Radhe, Govinda. Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda, Radhe Govinda. Radhe Govinda, 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 Radhe, Radhe, Govinda.
बोलिए अलबेली सरकार की जय।
So far in this series explaining the Vedic mantra tameva vidhitvati mrityumeti nanya pantha vidyate anaya, I explained that every soul in existence is desiring only anand, which means perfect happiness. And that anand is God. And the reason we're desiring that anand is because we are ansh of Bhagwan. We are a part of Him, and it's our nature. It's the nature of every ansh to desire His anshi. So we naturally desire God, or in other words, we naturally desire perfect happiness, which is referred to with the term anand. Every action we perform is motivated by this desire for happiness. There is no other motivation that anyone in this whole entire world has for any action. So every moment of every day our mind is active and we're performing karma for this one reason only, in order to find anand. And we've lived uncountable lifetimes. So in uncountable lifetimes, every moment of every day for uncountable, unlimited lifetimes, we've been doing one thing and one thing only, seeking perfect happiness, or in other words, seeking God. But we have yet to taste even a single drop of that real happiness. So we tried to find out why. And we found out, going into the Vedas, that there are three tattva: God, the souls, and Maya. And all three are eternal. And we need to understand the relationship between these three. What are they and how are they interrelated? So first of all, we went into the Vedas to find out about God. And we learned that God cannot be known through our intellect. And the reasons given were that God is beyond our intellect, because He's divine and our intellect is material. And because He's the one giving life to our very mind, He's our prerak, He's our prakashak, He's our dharak. And our mind is given life by Him. We are given life by Him. We are illuminated by Him. We are being upheld by Him. And not only that, but He is the abode of simultaneously existing opposites. Viruddha dharma shreya. So we learned in Vedas that He is simultaneously smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest. He is simultaneously formless and sakar. He has a form. He is one, but He has uncountable forms. He resides in the heart of every single soul, but He's also omnipresent in this world, and He's also in His divine world. So, such a God is absolutely beyond our intellect. And it makes sense. If our intellect could know God, then it would mean God is small enough to fit inside our limited intellect. And that would mean our intellect is supreme and God is under our intellect, which He's not. So it's perfectly fine that God is not under our intellect, which means we cannot know Him from our intellect. We cannot perceive Him with our material senses. But Ved still says, you must know God. It's the only way to cross Maya, if you know God. And this human birth you've received is the only chance to know God. So know God now. Strive to know Him now, in this life. Otherwise you may spend uncountable lifetimes, not unlimited, but uncountable, even millions, billions of lifetimes in the lower species before you get another chance to be born as human. So try to know God. So on one hand, Veda is saying you cannot know God, and on the other hand, it's saying you must know God. So we went into the scriptures and found out that the only way to know God is by receiving His grace. If we try to know Him on our own, we'll fail, because our mind is material, all of our efforts are limited. But any soul who receives God's grace can know Him. So having understood that, a few questions came up, because normally people wonder things like, is God controlling my actions, or is everything predetermined by destiny? Am I totally bound by my destiny, helpless before my destiny? So we resolved these doubts yesterday as well, that God does give us the power to think, the power to perform actions, etc., but He does not control our actions. He gives us the power, and then we have the free will to do as we please. And then, having received that free will, we perform karma. Because of the actions we perform out of our own free will, we receive a destiny. That destiny that we have in this life is because of our karma we did in our past life. So both exist simultaneously. We have free will to think and do and say what we choose in this life, but certain things that happen to us are part of our destiny. So we cannot blame our actions or our words or our thoughts on God, nor can we blame our actions, our words, or our thoughts on our destiny. So there's no sense just waiting around for God to make it happen. There's no sense just waiting around for destiny to make it happen. There's no sense just waiting around for time to make it happen. We have to make it happen ourselves. You can leave the doors open, actually. They squeak when they're open and closed. So, we have to do something. We have to receive God's grace, but we can't just wait around to receive it. There's something dependent upon us for receiving His grace as well. So, this brought us to the next topic of receiving God's grace. How does it happen? Uncountable souls have become God realized. They have known God. It means they have received His grace. We have not received His grace in uncountable lifetimes. So someone may think then there must be a condition for receiving God's grace. There's some kind of condition or even price, you might say, on receiving God's grace. So those people must have done that thing and we didn't. And that's why they got God's grace and we didn't. So another question comes up. Someone might think, well, what if those like Tulsidas, Meera, Nanak, Kabir, these souls who became saints, what if we are more sinful than what they were? What if we have done more offenses against God than they did? So that's why they got graced by God and we didn't. So, in fact, they were the same as we were. We all have lived uncountable lifetimes. And in those uncountable lifetimes, even if we've done one sin in every life, we've done uncountable sins. So they were our brothers and sisters as well, Tulsi, Meera, Nanak, just like us. They had also done uncountable sins. And even if we have done more sins than anyone else, God is forgiving. There's an example from the Ramayana, a story from the Ramayana, that Jayant, the crow, he came and pecked at Sita. And Ram said, "How dare you?" And he sent an arrow after Jayant. And Jayant flew to get away from that arrow. And it chased him all over the three worlds. He couldn't get away from it. In the end, he came rushing back and fell at Ram's feet. "Please forgive me. Please forgive me." He took refuge in Ram. And Ram said, "No way. Forget it. You know what you did? No, I'm not forgiving you." So Sita said, "Prabhu, may I ask a question?" Ram said, "Sure, go ahead. You'll answer it, right?" "Yes, of course." Sarvagya Ram, what question could he not answer? But when the one questioning is Sita, it's not going to be an ordinary question either. So she said, Nakinchin naparadhyati. O Ram, can you tell me, has there ever been such a soul? Is there such a soul? Or will there ever be such a soul who, before getting God realized, doesn't do aparad? Meaning, before God realization, is it even possible for a soul not to do wrong things, not to do sins? Ram said, okay, I'll forgive him. So, yes, are we bad? Have we been sinful? Have we done sins in this life? Yes. But that's not the prerequisite for receiving God's grace. Being sinless is not the prerequisite. Otherwise, no one would have ever qualified to receive His grace. So that's not the reason we haven't received His grace. So it brings us back to that point that there must be a condition. There's something you have to do, then God says, okay, I'll grace you. So, does that mean God is like a businessman? That whatever is the value of that thing, you have that much money, you give that, and you get that much worth of goods. So is God like that? Whatever was the value, whatever was the condition that had to be fulfilled, those souls who got God's grace, they fulfilled that condition. They gave that dam. And we didn't. We said, no, no, no. I'm of a higher moral quality than that. I don't give bribes. Or whatever our reason was, we decided not to fulfill that condition of God. So, this idea that God takes something to give something, if someone has that doubt in their mind, it means they have a wrong idea about God. So let's talk to God about it. If we were to ask God, oh God, why are you called Akar and Karun? Why are you called Binuhi Tu Sanehi? Akar and Karun, this is one of your big degrees. Like, you know, if someone does something great which gets recognized, then he's given like an upadhi that recognizes that thing he did. Like Krishna is called Giridhar, because he held the mountain. He's called Gopal because he grazes the cows. So he's also called Akaran Karun. Karun means kindness or grace. And Akaran, without any reason, without any condition, just gracing liberally, unconditionally. Binuhi tu sanehi, gracing and loving the souls, showering his kindness on the souls. Binuhi tu, without any condition or any reason.
Aiso ko udar jag mahi, binu seva jo dravai din par, Ram saris ko nahi, ऐसो को उदार जग माही.
So God, why do you have this upadhi, that you are akar and karun, if you have a condition, if you are demanding something in return for your grace? If when you demand something in order to give, if that's the definition of kripalu, being gracious, then all of us are gracious. We all do something nice for someone else, but usually with a hidden motive behind it. So, for example, even something like, let's say you go to the market, and there in the market, there are so many people waiting there at your service. There's the mithai ki dukan. That dukandari, he set up his shop waiting for you. He got up early, made everything fresh, all the sweets are there. Next to him you have someone selling saris
with his cloth shop. He pre-ordered everything. It's all there waiting for you. Next to that you have the chappal ki dukan. He has all of his different jute, chappal, everything waiting for you. Everything set up. Kitne dayalu, kitne kripalu, akaran karun, all for me and opened on time. I show up and the stores are open and they're just waiting. So God would say, yes, yes, but they have some hidden motive behind that. There's a karan behind why they're doing that. They have a selfish motive. So we could say, okay God, then do you also have a selfish motive behind your condition that we have to fulfill before we can get your grace? So God says, wait a second here, hold on. You're comparing me to a businessman, meaning I take something in order to give something. So first of all, do you even know what is the condition that has to be fulfilled? First find that out, then understand, am I a businessman or not? So what is the condition that we have to fulfill in order to receive God's grace? God Himself tells us in the Vedas. Tagvangha yo brahmanam vidadhati purvam yo vai vedanscha prahinoti tasmai tagvangha devamatma buddhi prakasham mumukshurvai sharanamaham prapadye. Sharanagati is the condition. You have to surrender to God to receive His grace. So if you surrender, if you become Sharanagat, He graces you. In the Gita, this is explained in many, many places. Just like yesterday, I quoted a verse for you. Tat prasadat shantim sthanam prapsyasi shashvatam. Through God's grace, you get divine bliss, entrance to His divine abode, everything divine through His grace. But how do you get His grace? The first half of that line says, Tameva sharanam gachha sarvabhavena bharat tat prasadat param shantim sthanam prapsyasi shashvatam. You have to surrender to Him, then He graces you. Mameva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. Krishna says, you surrender to me, then I grace you. With my grace, you cross maya. Ananyash chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. He says, become fully surrendered, 100% surrendered, and I will grace you. Krishna tells Uddhava the same thing in the Bhagavatam. Mamekameva sharana matmanam sarvadehinam. Uddhava, if you surrender to me wholeheartedly, exclusively, I give you everything. So it's all dependent upon surrender. So this word, sharanagati, surrender, it's just a word. How do we become surrendered, or what is surrender? What do we actually have to do in order to receive His grace? So when my Guruji, Kripaluji Maharaj, explains surrender, sometimes the way he explains it is this way. Surrender means kuch nahi karna. Doing nothing is surrender. So that means God's off the hook. See, what's the condition he's demanding? Surrender, which means do nothing. So it means he's not demanding anything from us. He says, stop. Stop doing anything. Do nothing and I will grace you. So that's his condition. Becoming surrendered means doing nothing. So we have to reach that state of doing nothing. That means we became surrendered, then we receive His grace. So to understand what is doing nothing, let's go to the Gita. In the Gita, in the beginning, in the first chapter, Arjuna is telling Krishna he doesn't want to fight the war. He's grieving. He says, Gandivam sransate hastatvacchaiva paridahyate nashaknoti navapnoti bhramativa chame mana. He says, Krishna, this feels terrible. I can't even hold my Gandiv bow anymore. I'm dropping it. My skin is burning. I can't even stand. He slumps down in the back of the chariot. And he says, Nayotsya iti Govindam. I'm not going to fight the war. And the reason he gave is that, first of all, if we fight this war, most of these men are going to die. All of these warriors are going to die. Their wives are going to be widowed. The society is going to be completely disturbed by this. People will leave doing right actions, doing dharma. Families will be destroyed. Society will be disrupted. I'm not going to fight this war. And on top of that, these are my gurujan. These people I'm going to fight against, Bhishma Pitamaha, Dronacharya, Kripacharya. These are all my teachers, my elders, people I look up to and worship. How can I fight against them? So he's putting forth his own view of dharma, that from my intellect, according to my mind, for these two reasons, it's against dharma. It would be against dharma for me to fight against my elders, and it would be against dharma because of the disruption it would cause to these warriors' families, and after that, the society. Therefore, I won't fight. But he's also saying to Krishna, Shishyasteham shadhimam tvam prapannam. Krishna, I am your shishya. And I am prapanna. I am your disciple, and I am surrendered to you. And you are my guru. He didn't notice, he didn't say, I'm your servant, or I'm your ansh. He said, I'm your disciple, and you're my guru. Otherwise, Krishna would have said, no, I can't help you, go to a guru. God doesn't directly teach anyone. But Arjuna was wise enough to say, no, no, you're my guru, so you teach me. So Krishna said, Arjuna, you say you're surrendered to me, but do you know what has to be surrendered? Your mind has to be surrendered. Your buddhi has to be surrendered. So you're telling me I'm prapanna. It means you've surrendered your buddhi to me. So now your buddhi is mine. So when you've given something away, then how are you using it for your own personal use again? You gave me your buddhi. That's what you're saying. I'm your shishya and I'm surrendered to you. Prapanna means fully surrendered. Yet you're using your buddhi for your own personal use. This is not surrender. So you have to surrender your buddhi to me, Arjuna. So Arjuna says, okay, I surrender my buddhi to you. Now tell me, what should I do? Krishna says, you're a kshatriya, and this is a righteous war. There are reasons you have to fight this war. It's unavoidable. We've tried all the other means to resolve this situation without the war. It's come to this point now where this war is going to happen with or without you. Even if you walk away from the battlefield right now, this war is going to happen. Interestingly enough, if we didn't know Krishna was God and you just heard a story about, oh, there was a man named Krishna and another man named Arjuna, and Arjuna decided he didn't want to fight the war, and the other man, Krishna, he convinced him to fight the war, and because of that, hundreds of thousands of people died in that war, we'd say, that Krishna, he sure was a bad one. If we didn't know, because we know he's God, we say, oh yes, it must have been the right thing to do. But at that time, even if we were there with our material intellect, what would we have thought? He's convincing him to fight the war? Anyway, this is another matter. We'll talk more in a few days from now about how with our material intellect we cannot understand the divine actions of God or saints. But anyway, Krishna told Arjuna that if you don't fight the war, you will go to Narak, because it's your duty to fight this war. In modern terms, you can say like it's a policeman's duty to uphold the law. If someone's breaking the law, the policeman has to use force, if necessary, to make that person stop. Similarly, Arjuna had to use force. He had to fight the war in order to defeat Duryodhan and everyone who was supporting him. And if the policeman chooses not to stop someone who's committing a crime, then he could be thrown in jail. So similarly, Arjuna, if you don't fight this war, you'll be punished because you ignored your dharma. You ignored doing the right thing. So you'll go to Narak as a punishment. Really, not doing something is a bad thing as well? Yes. Not doing something is also a bad thing. If it's the right thing, something you're expected to do, and you don't do it, it's considered bad. And then on the other hand, if you do fight the war, Arjun, hato va prapsyasi svargam jitva va bhokshyase mahim tasmad uttishtha kaunteya yuddhaya kritanishchaya. If you do fight the war, one of two things will happen, and either way you win. Either you will conquer them and you will win the war, in which case you will rule the earth. Or, on the other hand, you may get killed in the battle, in which case you'll go to Swarg as a reward for having observed your dharma. So, dono hath mein laddu. You can't lose. If you do the right thing, if you fight this war, you will be rewarded either by getting to rule the earth or by going and enjoying Swarg. So Arjuna said, I've already enjoyed all the pleasures of this earth planet and I know there's no true happiness here. So I don't desire that. I don't desire to rule the earth. That's not a reason for me to fight this war. What about Swarg? Is there any happiness over there? Krishna said, Te tam bhuktva swargalokam vishalam kshirne punye martyalokam vishanti. He said, no, you get to go to Swarg as a reward and you enjoy over there, but it's only temporary. Because when all of your punya is used up, then you come back here. So, the truth is, even when you're over there, there's no real happiness. Yamimam pushpitam vacham pravadantya vipaschitah vedavadarta parth nanyadaspiti vadinah. Actually, Arjun, those who strive to go to Swarg, they're fools. Because there's no happiness over there. It's a waste of your effort. So Arjuna is thinking, okay, in Narak, no real happiness there, obviously. This world, no real happiness here. Even in Swarg, no real happiness. So I don't like any of my options. Can you tell me, what should I do to find real happiness? So Krishna said, okay Arjuna, here is what you have to do. Do not perform the karma of fighting the war. And also, do not perform the karma of not fighting the war. In other words, do nothing. Arjuna is thinking, That's an interesting riddle, but I have no idea what it means practically. Don't fight the war, but don't not fight the war. In other words, do nothing. So wouldn't not fighting the war be doing nothing? No, if you don't fight the war, it's bop. You'll be ignoring your duty. So you'll be punished for that. So not fighting the war is a karma. And fighting the war is a karma. So what Krishna is saying is, don't do the action of fighting the war and don't do the action of not fighting the war. Do nothing. In other words, don't do good or do bad. Do nothing. If you do good, punyena punyalokam nayati papena papa mubhabhyameva manushyalokam. Ved says, if you do good, you go to swarg. If you do bad, you go to narak. And if you do a mixture of good and bad, you're reborn in mrityulok, this physical world. In other words, in either case, you're caught. You're bound by maya, bound by karma. If you do punya, if you do good, good karma, you go to swarg. In other words, class A jail. Jail because you're under maya. You're still under maya, caught in the cycle of birth and death. Still imperfect, no real happiness. So you're in swarg, it's better than here, so it's A-class jail. If you go to narak, that's C-class jail. And if you're here in this world, that's B-class jail. So any way you cut it, any way you look at it, if you're doing good or bad, you're caught, you're bound by karma, and thus bound under maya. So you have to do nothing. In other words, Krishna is telling Arjuna, do nothing and I will grace you. If you do something, I won't grace you. In the very end, Krishna tells Arjuna, in the after 18 chapters of lecture, he tells him, sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami mashuchah. Arjun, leaving all the other dharmas, just surrender to me. Surrender to me alone. So Arjuna is thinking, I already told you I'm surrendered. Chadimam tvam prapannam. I told you in the very beginning I'm surrendered. You're telling me to surrender again? Arjuna, in the beginning when you said you're surrendered to me, you were surrendered to me also and to other dharmas also. In other words, you are still applying your own intellect. That I think this is right, I think that's right, I think this is dharma, I think this is the right thing to do. But you are also surrendered to me. So in Hindi, you would say, Arjun bhi laga rahe the. Bhi means also. So he was also surrendered to Krishna, but also surrendered to dharma, or to his own idea of what dharma was. So Krishna says, hi lagao, mamekam sharanam braja. Surrender to me alone. Leave aside all whatever other ideas you have about this is right, that's right, this dharma, that dharma. Leave all of that and do one thing. Surrender to me. Give your mind to me. Give your buddhi to me. Give your man to me. This is surrender. So in other words, we have to attach our mind to Krishna. Of course, Arjuna ended up fighting the war. That was Krishna's agya to Arjuna. But he fought the war without doing the action of fighting the war. So even though he was fighting the war, he did nothing. How was he able to do nothing? Because his mind was in Krishna. He had surrendered his mind fully to Krishna, but he did the physical action of fighting the war. So the action is not an action if you're not attached to it. Arjuna was attached to Krishna, 100%. So he got the outcome of being attached to Krishna, which is God realization. He didn't get the outcome of, what did he do? He did his dharma. He followed his dharma by fighting the war. Because of that, what did he get? He got God realization. What are you supposed to get by following your dharma? You're supposed to get a material reward, a better destiny in your next life, or even some time in Swarg to enjoy. No, Arjun got God realized. Because he wasn't rewarded for doing his dharma, he was rewarded for attaching his mind to Krishna or surrendering his mind to Krishna. So this is the meaning of doing nothing. It doesn't mean physically doing nothing, because physically doing nothing is also doing something. If Arjun had walked away from the war, that would have been a karma. It would have been a bad action. So doing nothing means from inside, your mind is attached to God, then in terms of worldly karma, you're doing nothing, because you're not attached to what you're doing, you're attached to God. You're still doing what you're doing properly. You're not doing it carelessly. Did Arjun fight the war carelessly? No. He fought it with full attention, but no attachment. All of his attachment was in Krishna. So now we understand that to receive God's grace, we have to surrender. And surrendering means doing nothing. So surrender cannot even be considered a price or a real condition or a demand on God's part that you give me this, then I'll grace you. Because what is he asking us to do? Nothing. So to understand a little more about what surrender is, or what is this state of doing nothing, just take a couple of worldly examples. Like if two countries are at war, and one country's army surrenders. They put their hands in the air, their weapons down, and they surrender. What happens? The conquering army takes them, takes possession of them, and takes them back to their country. So if you surrender to God, you stop doing, he takes you to his divine abode and takes care of you. Or think of it this way. When a child is born, a newborn child does what? Nothing. The child can't even hold his own head straight. If you hold a newborn child up, the head goes to one side. The child can't sit up, can't roll over, can't feed himself, can't drink, can't go to the bathroom, can't wash himself, can't do anything. Everything is done for him by his mother. So his parents look after him because he's 100% surrendered to them. When the child cries, maybe there's a mosquito biting him. So he doesn't even have the sense to swat the fly away for himself. Swat the mosquito away, his mother or father has to come and do that for him. When he feels hungry, he cries, and they think, oh yes, it's been this long since he ate anything, so let's feed him. When they know it's time to wash him, they wash him. When it feels cold, they put some blanket on him, they put him to sleep, they roll him over, they sit him up, they do everything for him. This is complete surrender. So if we get to this stage with God, it's an internal state. If internally we're like that, if internally we're like that newborn child is with his mother, then we'll receive his grace. But see, when the child starts growing and starts doing more and more for himself, what happens? His parents gradually do less and less for him. The more the child learns to do for himself, the less the parents do. Even, you know, if a college or university student is living at home and, the parents were expecting them at the normal time that they come home from school, but, today, you know, someone comes and says, where's your son? He's not back yet? Oh, yeah, he's a little bit late today. He probably stopped over at that friend's or this friend's. He'll be coming. They're not worried. But if their six-year-old son is even 5 minutes late getting off the bus from school, the bus came and he's not there, what? There'll be a total panic instantly. Why? Because that six-year-old is more surrendered to their parents. The older one, He can take care of himself. I don't have to worry about him. So similarly, if we are not surrendered to God at all, like a full-grown child, he does everything for himself. His parents don't worry about him. If we're not surrendered to God at all, we don't get any grace. God just takes note of our actions and dispenses justice. You did this action, get this result. That's it. If we become a little bit surrendered, we get a little bit of grace. And if we become fully surrendered, then God honors all of his contracts, all of his promises that he set out in the scriptures like the Gita, where he says, Aham tvam sarvapape bhyo mokchayishyami. When you become fully surrendered to me, I delete all of your past actions. Gone. Totally. And I give you liberation. I release you from Maya.
Ananyaschintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham.
You become fully surrendered, Krishna says, and I take full responsibility for you. Yogakshemam vahamyaham. I take your total responsibility when you become totally surrendered.
Teshamaham samudharta mrityu sansara sagarat bhavami nachirat partha.
Ityadi, Krishna says, you become surrendered and I instantly take you across this bhavasagar, instantly take you across this ocean of Maya. So we have to become surrendered. Now, in case someone is thinking that, okay, I've become surrendered, so we should also think about this. Becoming surrendered is nothing great that we've done. Keep that in mind as well. We should not have that pride that I became surrendered to God. What is there in becoming surrendered? Kripaluji Maharaj gives a wonderful example. Like, let's say you've got something wrong with your leg, so you can't walk properly, but you're trying to walk. You're like moving along really slowly, limping pathetically. So something like that, we're doing something in this world. We're getting by somehow, doing something. Now a big, strong wrestler comes along, sees you limping along and says, oh, it looks like you need some help. So he puts his arm around you. And what do? You just stop doing everything totally. Okay, now you carry me.
So that wrestler might say, you were walking at least a little bit before. Keep putting a little bit of effort in and I'll also provide some help.
No, now you're here, I'm done. You carry me. I'm not doing anything anymore. So this is surrender. We're doing a little bit, getting by somehow one way or the other in our life. And God comes along and we give ourselves totally to him. That's surrender. In other words, we do nothing and he does everything. So what's the difficulty in doing that? What's the big deal? Why should we be proud of that? Just like a person limping along, oh, I can't walk, and some big strong person comes along and you fall into their arms and let them carry you. Did you do anything great? No, this is surrender. It's so easy. Nothing required on our part. Like a driver of a car, professional driver, and his master, his employee is in the back. He gets paid to drive him around. So today you had too much to drink and you're intoxicated. So you're not driving properly and you're swerving dangerously all over the road. So the owner says, enough, stop, pull over, I'm driving. You get out and get in the back seat here where I'm sitting. I'll get in the front seat and drive. So you stop the car, you get out, you sit in the back, and now you just relax. You can just relax, go to sleep if you want. He's driving. He's taking care of everything. So nothing required, no effort required from your part in surrendering to God. So, going back to our original analogy of God as a businessman. Think about this. What is God giving us? He's giving us everything. Everything divine. Becoming surrendered to God means what? Becoming surrendered to God means getting His grace. And getting His grace means what? Getting His grace means getting His divine vision. It means with these eyes, you're going to get to see God. He's going to give you His divine vision, His divine bliss. He's going to give you a divine mind. See, getting to see God with your eyes, it doesn't mean that God is going to make Himself material. See, your eyes are material right now. So you can only see material things. He's not going to make Himself material so that you can see Him with your material eyes. God is divine and your eyes are material. So for you to see Him, does that mean He's going to make Himself material? No. He is still divine. He gives you divine power in your eyes so you can see His divine form. Like Arjuna in the Gita. Divyam dadami te chakshuhu pashyame yogamayishvaram. Krishna gave Arjuna divine vision, divine eyesight. Not surgically, he didn't have to perform surgery and implant new divine eyes. Oh, the divine vision is from the divine power. So you still have your material eyes, but in those material eyes you got divine power. You still have your mind, but in your mind you got divine power. So now with your eyes you can see God. Whether you want to see Ram or Krishna when they've descended on this earth planet during their avatar, or whether you want to see them omnipresent in this world, either way you need divine vision for that, and once you get that divine vision you can see Him all the time. Omnipresent, or if you happen to be there during His descension, you can obviously see Him and recognize His divinity when you meet Him in person. So that is the meaning of God's grace, that He is going to give you divine vision. Once you get that divine vision, you don't even need these material eyes to see Him. If you're blind physically, you can't see anything materially, but now He's given you the divine vision. Even if you can't see anything in this world, you can still see Him with your divine vision. So, imagine you went to a shop and you said, give me 10 saris. So, the manager pulls out, you choose, you take your 10 saris. He's writing something down on a paper and he hands you that. And you say, what's this? He says, that's the bill. Bill? Yeah, for the 10 saris you took, I wrote the value of all that, that total at the bottom. You have to pay that amount for all these saris. Oh, I didn't bring any money. The shop owner will think you're crazy. But this is the kind of deal God is offering us. You give me nothing, and I'll give you everything in return. In other words, you surrender. What is our surrender giving God? Nothing. It's just a matter of become surrendered, which means do nothing, and He'll grace you. He'll give you everything. Now, even if God said, what if God said to you, okay, at least give part of the value of what I'm giving you. Even if you don't give the whole value for what I'm giving you, unlimited divine happiness, unlimited divine knowledge, divine mind, divine senses. Okay, if you can't afford the whole thing, I'll still give you the whole thing, but pay half or pay one quarter. Give me something in return to pay at least a fraction of what I'm giving you back.
What would we have to offer him? What do we have? Material body. Ganda. Material senses. Material mind. Even more ganda. You think your body is dirty? This body only has the dirt of one lifetime on it. Our mind has the accumulated dirt of uncountable sins of uncountable past lifetimes. How dirty is this mind? And our possessions, our wealth, that's also material. So everything God is giving us is divine. And the only thing we have to offer in return is all material things, dirty things. So God, how can I give you that? That cannot be of any value to you. So I have nothing to offer you in return. I have nothing to give you in return for what you are giving. If you're a businessman and you're making this deal, that's the worst deal imaginable for you. You're giving me unlimited divine things, and all I have to offer you in return is a few useless material things. Even if I had this whole, let's say everything in this whole earth planet was written in my name. Or not just this earth planet, uncountable earth planets in this endless universe was all written in my name, and I could offer that to God, it's still useless in front of the divine things he's giving us. And add to that one more fact, it all belongs to him anyway. He's the one who gave us this body. He's the one who gave us this mind. It's all his. Yeah, we might have $1 million in our bank account. So whose world did we earn that from? This world belongs to God too, and we earned all of that, accumulated all of that out of his world, and then we feel proud to offer it back to him. Oh, I gave this much to the temple. I gave this much to that saint. We get a pride in our heart, or we offer it to a poor person. It's God's thing we're offering back to his saints or to him or to another one of his children in need of it. So, luckily for us, surrender just means offering your mind to God. That's it. Forget about all the rest. Surrendering means offering your mind. And our mind is material and impure. Yet God says, I don't care. You give me that, and I'll give you everything divine in return. You give me your mind, which is full of uncountable lifetimes of sins. You give me that. What will I do for you? I'll clean it, fill it with divine power and divine bliss and divine knowledge, and I'll give it back to you. How's that sound? So obviously God is not a businessman. He is not taking anything of value from us in return for his grace. All he's asking is that we give him our mind so he can clean it, fill it with divine power, and give it back to us. So that's like if some dhobi offers to wash your clothes for free, you'll be happy about that, won't you? Even if that you only had, you know, maybe a few sets of clothes, it might only be worth, you know, 40 or 50 rupees or 200 rupees value of service, what he's doing for you for free. But if some dhobi does that, well, wash your clothes for free. Oh, you'll be so happy. You're giving me that for free? Washing my dirty clothes without taking any payment? You're so happy over saving 200 rupees or getting 200 rupees worth of, you know, value for nothing. God is willing to wash the unlimited dirt out of our material mind for free. That's his grace. That's the meaning of his grace. So all we have to do for that to happen is surrender to him. And think of becoming surrendered like this. God is a Karan Karun because he's ever waiting to grace every soul. Or you can say he's already gracing like a shower of grace. But where can you receive that grace? That grace has to be received in our heart or in our mind. You can say in our Antahkaran, in our man. So if it's pouring down rain outside and you go out with a bucket, but you turn the bucket upside down, it can rain for hours. It can be a torrential downpour and you won't get a drop of that. And then blame the clouds. What? I wanted water. We do the same thing to God. Our heart is closed to Him and we're saying, why haven't you graced me? With the logic we were using in the beginning, well, you're supposed to be akaran karun, gracing without any reason. So why haven't you graced me yet? In uncountable lifetimes, until now, you still haven't graced me? What are you waiting for? And God is saying, I am gracing you. Open your heart and receive it. That's surrender. That's it. Turn the bucket right side up. Turn your heart towards God. So however you want to say that, if you want to think of it as turning towards God, becoming surrendered to God, attaching your mind to God, whatever words you want to use. We're using the word sharanagati. If you become surrendered to God, you receive His grace. When you receive His grace, you know Him. You instantly get freed from maya. You receive divine bliss. You get everything. So, we have to turn our mind towards God. We have to attach our mind to God. But this is easier said than done. Achieving that state of doing nothing means becoming fully surrendered to God. When you become fully surrendered, when your mind becomes fully attached to Him, even if you're physically doing in the world, you won't be doing anything. We'll talk about that more when we bring up the topic of God-realized saints in a couple of days. But to get to that point, you have to do a lot. In other words, we're trying to get to the point of doing nothing. But if you just try to think, okay, then I'll do nothing. Just thinking, I'll do nothing, you're doing something. And the mind is always thinking something. Nahi kaschit charnamapi jatu tishtatya karma krit. Gita. This mind is never inactive. So doing nothing is easy to say, very difficult to accomplish. So to get to that state, like a newborn baby, fully giving ourselves in God's arms, doing nothing. To get to that state, we will have to do a lot. Because right now our mind is attached in this world. See, why are we turned away from God? Because we're turned towards the world. Think of it that way. We're fully attached in this world, so when we're attached here, how can we attach over there? We can't. We have to detach from here in order to attach over there. If we're turned towards the world, it means our back is to God. So to turn towards God, you have to turn away from the world and towards God. Not physically turning away from the world. Arjun fought the war, but he turned away from the world. He turned towards Krishna. So not physically, but emotionally, mentally, detaching from the world and attaching to God. That is how you become surrendered. So for that to happen, we have to understand about this world. Because right now, we're fully surrendered to the world. We believe, we have full faith. There is happiness in this world, and I will find it, if not today, tomorrow. We all have this faith. And because of this faith, we're fully attached in the world, and unwilling to turn towards God. We have more faith in the world than in God. So that's why we're surrendered to this world and not to God. Even though intellectually we know true happiness is in God, not in the world. But we have to understand this at a much deeper level. That's the only way that we'll be able to surrender to God, if we really understand the nature of this world, the nature of worldly happiness, the nature of love in this world, the nature of relationships. And when we understand the reality of this world and worldly happiness, then our mind will be free to attach itself to God and will be able to become surrendered to Him.
So tomorrow we're going to take up this new topic of sansar ka swarup. What is the nature of this world and what is the nature of worldly happiness? And to begin with, we'll take up right from the beginning. Where did this world come from? We'll begin with that topic tomorrow and then move on to other things like the nature of worldly happiness. And today we'll finish with one more kirtan.
जय हो जय हो अल बेलो सरकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो जय हो अल बेलो सरकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो नागर नंद कुमार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो नागर नंद कुमार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो जय हो अल बेलो सरकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो जय हो अल बेलो सरकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो राधा प्राणाधार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो राधा प्राणाधार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो सखीन प्राण साकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो सखीन प्राण साकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो जय हो अल बेलो सरकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो जय हो अल बेलो सरकार बलिहार बलिहार जय हो रसिकन को सरदार balihar, balihar. Jai ho rasikan ko sardar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho niradhar adhar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho niradhar adhar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho dinan ko rakhwar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho dinan ko rakhwar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho patitan ki patwar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho patitan ki patwar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho al belo sarkar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho al belo sarkar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho adham udharan har, balihar, balihar. Jai ho adham udharan har, balihar, balihar. Jai ho sharanagat rijhvar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho sharanagat rijhvar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho kripa rup sakar, balihar, balihar. Jai ho kripa rup sakar, balihar, balihar. Balihar, balihar. Om Balihar, Balihar. Om Balihar, Balihar. Balihar, Balihar. Jai ho, Jai ho, Al Bilo Sarkar. Balihar, Balihar. Sarkar, Balihar, Balihar. Jai ho, Jai ho, Al Bilo Sarkar, Balihar, Balihar. Sarkar, Balihar, Balihar. Oh, Balihar, Balihar. Balihar, Balihar. Jai ho, Jai ho, Al Bilo Sarkar. Balihar, Balihar. Jai ho, Jai ho, Al Bilo Sarkar. Balihar, Balihar. Jai ho, Jai ho, Al Bilo Sarkar. Balihar, Balihar.
Bolie Shri Raghavendra Sarkar ki jai.